MonjiCast, the podcast you never made a deal with. We're also the show that didn't make the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs, even if you round down, but we do provide an Asian perspective into the galaxy far, far away. I'm your host, Bria, and with me are my co-hosts, Brian and Jay.
Hello.
Hello.
On today's episode, we're talking about Star Wars Resistance, so sit back and enjoy the MonjiCast, and let me tell you how relieved I am that they actually gave us those two trailers, and we have something to talk about.
It was going to be a really empty episode if we just had
ships, I guess.
I was really happy they gave us something to talk about before Dragon Con, and then, of course, the panel I was on that was supposed to talk about Resistance didn't talk about Resistance at all, which was great.
That's just bizarre. I still don't understand it.
Yeah, but the good news is we spent a whole 20 minutes on the holiday special.
Good?
Maybe.
I'm so sorry. But anyways, so should we go with And Then There's This, which was going so well until today?
We were so close. We were so, close.
Let's start with the good things. Which, out of the four things we have, we had three out of four good things, or at least decent things. So to start us off, since we talked about Crazy Rich Asians in our bonus episode last month, the latest numbers I saw were that they had cleared $159 million. And they were fifth in the box office last weekend, which is pretty darn good.
That's really good staying power.
I mean, staying at fifth in the box office this long into its run is good for any film. It's insanely good for a rom-com.
I still need to go see it again. I keep meaning to, but then things like Dragon Con pop up.
And I think, you know, what we discussed last time was how word of mouth had gotten it to be so big in the first place. And I imagine that a lot of people were hearing about it and still were curious about it to give it a shot and see. And I hope that still continues in the future as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's on my Christmas list already. And then speaking of other, let's not call this movie. last week, it was announced that Avatar The Last Airbender is going to get a live action adaptation from Netflix, which I think initially made all of us go, oh, no, not again, because of the movie adaptation that shall not be mentioned.
Damn but- you, Shyamalan!
But it appears that not only are the original creators going to be involved, but also that they've said they're going to make sure they cast people of color. I did not write down the exact language, but it seemed like we might actually get ethnically appropriate characters.
I think that's almost the exact wording. It was like ethnically and culturally appropriate was the terms they used. Which I'm glad they addressed and confronted it right away and made it clear to everyone.
Yeah,
likewise.
I'm really glad we're not having to sweat that one out.
Yeah. It was interesting, though, seeing the different reactions from people on Twitter. I can't necessarily say I was clamoring for a live action adaptation, mostly because I just want them to put the cartoon on Netflix. But I think it could be really neat to see, especially if they cast a bunch of unknowns.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm really looking forward to.
If nothing else, this is a very popular property, and it can be used as a launching pad for some new careers, and that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and we've already seen what Netflix can do with things like Stranger Things and how all those actors involved are now famous. And if The Last Airbender live action show can do the same thing for a cast of brand new Asian actors, I think that's a fantastic opportunity for the actors, and I think for movie entertainment going audiences in general, because we've seen that, you know, casting is sort of almost a closed system, right? Like, you have to pay your dues and you play certain roles and then you get to do bigger roles, and so this could be a great avenue to see a lot of careers launched.
You know, that's actually a really good point about mentioning Stranger Things, because Netflix does have experience and does have someone in there who knows how to pick child actors. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of Stranger Things because I don't have that 80s nostalgia, but every single one of those kids can act. So I think that bodes really, really well, especially when your main cast is going to be between the ages of what, 12 and 16.
Yes, that's about right. Yeah, I think that is exactly right for the TV show.
I'm very impressed with myself. I didn't know I remembered that.
I mean, sure, you may not have been clamoring for a live action or serialized adaptation of this, but I think on the whole, it's significantly more good news than not.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where I don't think any of us were like expecting or looking for this, but there's not only a significant silver lining, but this could be a very good thing and not only open up opportunities for those actors, it could revive the franchise after the thrashing it took from the movie and how Nickelodeon kind of unceremoniously tried to kill off the TV show with Korra.
Yeah. Also, oh gosh, I can't remember where the heck I saw it, but I saw a GIF today of some of the bending from the movie. And they have a whole bunch of earthbenders, like five of them, to move a small rock against a firebender. And it was just so, so bad. Like,
oh,
why?
On just the bright palette refreshing note, at least we're going to get also an Avatar Kyoshi novel soon, I believe, too.
Ooh. Two of them, right? YA?
Is it two? I didn't even know it was two. I thought it was just one.
I think it's two of them. I think it's a duology.
Oh, even better. Especially since Kyoshi was like the most intriguing character, backstory character that we only got like brief glimpses of in the original series.
Yeah. It should be really, really neat to see. And then elsewhere on our good news is that Chloe Zhao was tapped to direct Marvel's The Eternals, which that's a pretty deep cut as far as Marvel goes, because I even had to Google it to double check and make sure I was even thinking of the right thing. Neither of you guys are familiar, right?
I've only seen The Eternals vaguely in passing in the Incredible Hercules comics, but I don't know anything about the lore other than there's someone named Athena. But not Athena. That's all I know.
Yeah.
Of course you would pick up on that.
Yeah, I'm only aware of the Eternals just in vague references made in other works.
Yeah. But it's obviously a good thing that we're seeing not only a female director, but an Asian female director, especially because it's felt like in the past that most of the women who have been hired, they've only really been paying attention to hiring women for female superhero projects.
Right. And I think we may have had conversations about this in the past where behind the screen diversity is as important as in front of the screen. And it's good to see that these kind of films are moving forward in that direction, because that, again, it's a system that builds in on itself. So the more it happens in the past, the more it'll happen in the future.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, good news all around there.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just seeing on Twitter where apparently one of our friends got to meet Christopher Sean today, and I'm now insanely jealous, which is way better news than the bullshit that happened today. Yes, that. In which we got the new trailer for the second Fantastic Beasts film, and it turns out that J.K. Rowling just needs to stop. Because apparently Lord Voldemort's Snake is actually a woman, an East Asian woman who has some condition called maledictus, which is passed down from mother to daughter in some blood thing that's going to turn her into a snake one day. And I'm just angry.
So let me see if I can sum this one up in 140 characters or less. Woman of color is turned into a snake who becomes the pet of an evil white Nazi analog.
Yeah.
That's... Wow. Yikes.
All the tweets I saw, like, slowly digesting and breaking this down made it even worse and worse and worse. Just the physical stereotyping to how the snake is killed in the books and everything. It just, it's layers upon layers of, did nobody, and specifically did J.K. Rowling, not think this through? Just
no.
Ugh.
Here's the problem I have with J.K. Rowling at this point, is that she just keeps talking, and then she just keeps writing things, and no one wants to tell her no anymore. And so basically everything she has done in this fandom since she finished the seventh book just makes me want to yell, stop, please stop.
I saw someone earlier that said J.K. Rowling is new George Lucas, isn't she? But in fairness to Lucas, whatever faults he may have, at least he hasn't shown the streak of racism and transphobia that J.K. Rowling's been showing of late.
Yeah. And Claudia Kim just deserves so much better than playing Nagini or Nagini or have you pronounce a stupid snake's name, because honestly, I try to block it out of my mind.
Wasn't Johnny Depp enough?
I know, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, there's... We thought they hit a low, and it turns out they can go even lower.
There is no floor, as we're rapidly discovering.
Honestly, I thought when she did that crap, because someone on Twitter reminded me of this today, when she did all the history into the American Wizarding School.
That was even, that was every bit as bad.
And the Native American, like, appropriation, and first of all, the fact that there's one school in the United States, but whatever. But, like, all of the Native American appropriation and the whole crap she did there, I'm like...
Two things. It's okay to shut up and listen, and sensitivity readers get them.
Yeah, especially if it's like a cultural, like, so, you know, not even that she's not Native American, but she's just unfamiliar with the context and history with America's relationship with Native Americans. And it's those two double disconnects that just made it even worse.
Yeah. And from what I hear, a lot of the stuff she wrote about it was just disrespectful. And I can't believe the snake is a lady. Like, really? The snake is actually a lady who gets beheaded at some point.
Ugh.
Oh, and then she's in the circus.
Yeah. Like, I missed that detail.
That's where she meets the weird guy from the first movie. Is apparently they're traveling around in the circus together, and she's kept in a cage.
How many layers of bad decisions can we cram into one thing?
These movies could have been great, because the thing is they didn't have to go into any of this crap. Like, they didn't have to go into the Dumbledore stuff. They could have just done some fun movies about a guy and the animals he likes, but no.
It's at the point now where I don't know if I'm just disappointed or still angry, but I'm terrified of what bad choice they're going to make next with it.
I'm honestly not going to see the movie. The final straw for me.
I mean, I didn't see the last one. I'd considered, okay, maybe I'll just pick it up at Redbox and watch it. No, the whole series is a write-off for me now. There's no care being shown at all.
I think if the only silver lining is if it's alienated enough of the fans that nobody goes to see it, maybe it'll be the end of this sad project.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
I know, studios.
Oh, no. You think enough fans are going to stop? That's adorable.
Yeah.
I guess that's true. The internet is not real life.
I mean, there's
got that sometimes.
There's always the shot that the film is just bad enough that it flops.
I have no hope.
It's just... Yeah. Listen to feedback and criticism, and just because you've had an idea in your head for 20 years doesn't mean it's a good idea.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I do have hope for, though.
Oh, what's that?
Star Wars Resistance.
Oh, boy.
Aren't you really excited that we can see the first episode in like a week and a half?
Oh my God.
Still crazy to imagine that.
Oh, that's sneaking up on me.
Yeah. Why is it 10 p.m. is beyond
press
me.
Thing today, right?
Yeah, they had it.
Yeah.
Judging by the tweets I'm seeing, because someone got to meet Christopher Sean and I'm so jealous.
Aw.
He's just handsome.
You're not wrong.
I'm sorry, I'll stop swooning.
No, I mean, I'm right there chin-handsing with you.
Yeah. So, what were your guys, what were your initial reactions when they announced the show?
I'm gonna get yelled at for this, but my initial reaction was, please no Jedi.
Along the same veins, I literally said, ha, they can't use Jedi in this one, can they? And, you know, then I thought, but what if they do?
Jay, do not tempt fate.
Cornhorn is coming, guys. Get ready.
Okay, I would laugh so hard if Cornhorn.
I would take that just for the meltdowns that would ensue.
Oh, boy. So when they first announced it, they came out with the pilot aspect, right?
Yes, because they showed us that picture with the two ships, I think, is what we got.
That's right. The main cover one.
Yeah.
So we were actually, unlike with Rogue One, we were pretty sure this one was definitely, there was a lot of solid evidence to say it was going to be about pilots.
I think the initial announcement post on the official site specifically mentioned pilots.
Yeah.
You have a better memory than me. So, yeah. So I guess we were all reasonably excited. I agree with Brian about being pretty optimistic about not having it be about Jedi or not having Jedi take the forefront role, because there really aren't any around there. And I'm not sure forefront role is really a term, but I'm making it one now. So over the last couple weeks, it was like probably 3 weeks ago, they came out with a video with Team Fireball. So on there is Kaz, I'm going to say Jaeger, and it's not right.
They say Jaeger, I think, Jaeger. Right?
I'm sorry. It should be Jaeger.
It should be Jaeger.
It should be. Like, get in the giant robot. Jaeger, Niku, Tam, and then Bucket the droid. And then I think about 2 weeks ago is when they came out with the video for Team Aces, which has Tora Doza, who is my new darling, Hype Phazon, Freya, Griff, and Bo Keevil, which has some of the most ridiculously on the nose names. Bo Keevil. It's just Evil Knievel. I'm like, did you guys try with this one?
I love that they just gave Donald Faison's character, just named him Hype Phazon. That's just, that makes me happy.
And I think Dave Filoni even said, I literally designed this character on Donald Faison, so why not?
Yeah, they had that in that video, the Team Aces video, I think.
Yep.
Oh, you know what I just realized? This means he totally knew, because of production schedules. He totally knew he had probably already recorded some of his stuff when he showed up to that Star Wars Rebel screening.
I'm pretty sure he did, yeah.
Oh, that makes me happy. So, gut reaction. Are you guys Team Fireball or Team Aces?
Aces.
I'm definitely Team Aces.
Whoa. We're all Aces?
See, it was interesting because originally, like, I really like Kaz. I was like thinking, oh, he's the first actual animation protagonist that I'm really behind. And then they announced Imperial Milk Drinker, and I'm like, nope, I'm Team Aces now.
Okay, I know that technically we're supposed to. So, just as a general note for everyone, this is going to be just a more general Resistance episode. We're not going to focus only on Kaz, because that's not entirely fair to Kaz.
We need a season before we can do that.
Yes, maybe two. So we just want to talk about the show and just get excited about it. But Jay, tell me about your milk boy.
So
why does he delight you?
So first of all, we got that original. I think this was either in the teaser trailer or the Team Fireball trailer. And we just see this old guy in a TIE fighter outfit just chilling, drinking some milk. And it was just the most random, incongruous thing ever. And we just started calling him Imperial Milk Drinker. Why is he there? Why is he drinking milk? We don't know these answers. And we eventually find out that he's an ex-Imperial TIE pilot, but it just, the idea of this old guy who just sits there drinking milk and racing with a bunch of random kids is inherently hilarious to me.
How about you, Brian? Do you have a favorite yet?
Freya Fenris, the no-nonsense badass lady pilot.
Tell me more.
I mean, it's hitting so many of my favorite pilot tropes, just right there. And I expect that she will be supremely perturbed and annoyed by Kaz, and I can't wait for it.
I love that she's being voiced by Mary Elizabeth. I'm blanking on her last name.
McGlynn.
Thank you. That makes me happy that she's back and then Stephen Sanson is back. I'm not pronouncing any name right tonight. I am so sorry to literally everyone. But I'm glad we're seeing more of the usual Star Wars voice actors in here, too, with a whole bunch of the new kids. But I think my favorite has to be Tora Doza. I fell in love with her in the teaser trailer because she's just adorable. She's got these two little buns on top of her head and she's just cute. And she's young. She's a smart ass. Well, not honestly a smart ass, but she's like, she's the best one. Jesus, kid. And I can't wait to see her like just run rings around everyone.
And she's got a fat, fluffy space kitty.
It's so fat.
And apparently she artistically decorates her ship.
Does she really?
Yeah, that's in her. I think it's in the ship's description on the data bank.
Bria, it is game over for you.
Oh, no. What if one of her favorite artists is Sabine?
Perfect. Oh,
Dave, those are the kind of connections I'm here for.
Oh, I hope that's a thing. Oh, man. That's going to be so good. Oh, so I noticed that one of the characters that a lot of people gravitated toward was Neeku.
I love Neeku.
Tell me more, Brian.
Neeku is pretty much our mutual friend Danny, just in animated format. And optimistic to a fault. I'm trying to think of how to describe him. Just so sunny in the face of it all, and just optimistic at the worst possible times to be optimistic about things.
I loved that line he had in that the team Fireball intro about his heart rate being elevated and him liking adventures.
It's like he sees the bright side out of everything and is always so cheerful and happy. Even the inflection in his voice is always just happy.
Then there was a line something like, "Oh, I had a pet something or other, and then it died. Beat. And then I ate it."
I mean, it's a good use of resources.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
The
show. They're gonna break him.
Oh yeah, and it's gonna be cruel.
Oh no.
I mean, they're starting off by telling us it's a happy kid show, and you know that they're just trying to let us get our guards down, and then they'll do very bad things.
I mean, he's gonna be the puppy of the cast, and what do writers like to do? They like to make the puppy suffer for some reason.
Wait, isn't Kaz there because he's looking, because he's on a spy mission. He's trying to figure out who the spy is, right?
Yeah, he's trying to figure out who's loyal to the Republican Resistance and who has loyalties to the First Order. God damn it, if it's Neeku.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
First of all, if you called it, well done. But second, oh, no.
Oh.
Oh. We've been down this path before in Poe Dameron.
I really don't want to cap this section of audio and post it with regret to SoundCloud like a year and a half from now.
So, okay, you know what? It's not going to happen. It'll be fine. Everyone in...
It'll be bucking. It'll be okay.
Oh, I hope it's not hype.
I hope it's not Griff.
It can be Bo Keevil. He doesn't talk. That's exactly why he doesn't talk.
I think the other realistic possibility, and one that would be designed to rip our hearts out, No, I think it'd be Yeager.
Oh.
Because he's the old rebel.
The old rebel.
He was a former rebel, yeah.
The old rebel, one Poe trusted.
Oh. Okay, so that actually takes me to something I was thinking about that I tweeted about is we don't know when in the timeline this takes place, except, well, we do know, but like compared to other things that have been published. And I am so, if this takes place after Poe Dameron, like number 13, after Poe has found out who the spy is and he's lost part of his squadron, that's going to hurt so much.
Oh, that's, ouch. Ouch.
Yeah.
Well, this went from happy to dark in a hurry.
So speaking of pain and darkness, I want to add some more before we leave this topic.
Thanks, Jay, but continue.
So Kaz's homeworld is mentioned to be a wealthy city planet. And, you know, my mind went to Coruscant, but then people on Twitter are like, no, no, no. It's probably Hosnian Prime. And I was thinking, oh, no.
Ooh.
No, no, no. Is his family there? No, 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 no.
Who said he still has family?
I think the blurb says his family lives on Hosnian Prime or something like that. Or not Hosnian, but lives on that city world or whatever.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And what happens if this show runs through TFA and TLJ on the timeline?
I could see that as a season finale at some point, either season one, two, or three, you know, whenever.
Oh. All they have to do is get through two seasons, and then they've got open season on whatever comes after.
And if they do a big enough timeline hop for episode 9, that gives them a little playing room after The Last Jedi to work with as well.
Yeah, and I'm convinced it's going to be at least a year.
Oh,
if not three.
I'm thinking somewhere from 3 to 5.
Yeah. Oh, no. Okay, let's talk about Kaz and not how, you know, all his family may or may not be dead in 6 months. So he is being voiced by actor Christopher Sean, who is, I believe he's mixed. He's part Japanese, I believe. I know him from when he was on The Lizzie Bennett Diaries, which was a really, really amazing web series done by a group called Pemberley Digital, which if you know, anyone knows the Vlogbrothers, Hank Green was a big part of doing that series. But he played Bing Lee, a.k.a. Mr. Bing Lee, in the series, and he was amazing and charming and very, very charming, in case you didn't get that point across. And I think it's really awesome that we're seeing him, number one, in Star Wars, but also that they definitely made Kaz look a little bit like him. So in my mind, this means Kaz is at least half Asian. So what do you think this means for representation? And do you guys think the fandom is going to whitewash him, or will his quote unquote Asian sounding name save him?
So, first of all, it's wild that he's the main character. Like, that's really exciting. I mean, it reminds me of how revolutionary it was to have Iden Versio be a main character in Star Wars. And now we get to see the same thing with an animated kids TV show. And I'm hoping, you know, and knowing fandom, hopes can get dashed really quickly, but I'm hoping his name explicitly sounding more Asian will get, you know, fan artists and costumers maybe to realize that he's supposed to be at least half Asian, the character.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is great news, and I'm super hopeful for what this is going to mean for kids watching this and seeing themselves in Star Wars for the first time. Of course, I never put it past fandom for their exceptional ability to somehow whitewash.
Yeah. Yeah. And who wants to actually say his full name, since I keep rewatching the video and then getting it wrong in my head? I can't pronounce it like Christopher can.
Let's try this. Kazuda Ziono? Is that right?
I think it's a she.
Shiono?
The ex. Maybe I'm just looking at it from like
I should have rewatched this before starting. I think Kazuda Ziono, something like that.
I did watch it before starting. Hold on. Let me find it.
Yeah, we got it there somewhere.
Go faster, video. Go faster. Shut up, Dave. Give me Christopher.
I like this commentary track.
I mean, at least the other names
are
easier
to
pronounce for us.
Oh, you are right. Hold on, wait. You guys talked over it. Give me a sec. Hold on. Oh, no, you're right about the Ziono.
Oh, okay.
Huh.
I would have been really impressed if they did it the Chinese way, though. That would have been really cool.
Yeah, because I always think like the XI is more of like a shh sound. Not that I speak Mandarin well, but yeah. Zun is young.
Kind of bummed that isn't how it's pronounced.
Yeah. Oh, well. But yeah, so actually he's only one part of, I mean, obviously he's the one where I think the three of us are probably going to latch onto a little bit more in terms of representation, but it's actually a pretty diverse cast. Also, wow, I really was half-assing the show notes this week, wasn't I? Sometimes I leave a note in there that says I need to write better show notes than this, and then I forget to delete it.
That's so okay. I half-ass show notes for everything I do.
Yeah, it's great, guys. So we have diversity both on the screen and then amongst the voice actors themselves. So we already mentioned Kaz and Christopher Sean. Tora is being voiced by Mirna Velasco.
Yeah, Mirna Velasco.
Yeah, she's Hispanic, I believe. And then there's actually three Black actors who are voicing characters: Susie McGrath, Scott Lawrence, and then Donald Faison. So Tam, I just want to say Jaeger. Jaeger.
I'm just going to keep saying Jaeger because I'm stubborn and believe that's how it should have been.
Where do you want to die, Mr. Beckett?
I mean, it's spelled just like Chuck Yeager, dang it.
Yeah, exactly. It's the name's supposed to be an homage to Chuck Yeager.
Yeah. Oh. But anyway, so there's three of them, and also Hype, who is a Rodian. And actually, I wanted to talk about that a little bit because there can sometimes be an issue with actors of color who, especially in voice acting, who they get to have these parts, but then their character, you don't get that same representation on the screen. Like we saw that with Callus. We sometimes see it in the live action where the characters mm-hmm. become aliens. So do you think it's a little bit different here since we do have Tam and we have not Jaeger?
Yeah. The problem is definitely when you have an actor of color and then you have them playing a white character or an alien character and you have no other actors of color actually on the screen as and the that. Other
go ahead.
Oh no, that you're good.
Okay. So the other thing I was going to say is not only is it bad when they're the only, you know, the only person of color is an alien or a white person, but usually in those circumstances, they'll tell us that, oh, well, we created this role first and then, you know, the actor came in second. This time it's kind of cool that Hype was actually apparently designed around Donald Faison. And so there's the double fact that there is a lot of diversity in the visual cast, but then also the character is just so modeled around him that it kind of works for me, even though he's a Rodian.
Yeah, and plus the other, there's two aliens in the main cast, and the other one is played by a white actor too. So I think that helps sort of balance it out a little bit.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely a problem where it's definitely a problem when you don't have other like Black actors in your cast, and it's really a problem when your lone Black actor isn't that on screen. But when we're doing this thing where we have multiple Black actors and multiple Black characters, that it's not a problem for me.
And one thing I want to add about Scott Lawrence, since I was looking up all these folks to see what they were in before, apparently Scott Lawrence has voiced Darth Vader in almost practically every single video game that exists, all the way back to Star Wars Rebellion in the 90s. So he is like a Star Wars and Darth Vader veteran.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Did he do it in Battlefront 2 as well?
He may have. Let me check really quick.
Yeah, Scott Lawrence has been doing Star Wars voice work for a long time.
Yes, he did
time.
Do it in Battlefront 2. Oh, wait, wow. That's the 2005 version, not the recent one.
Which actually, hopefully it's done updating by the time we're done this podcast, because I want to play the new squad system.
It's been a while since I've played Battlefront. I've been so wrapped up in catching up on my game's backlog.
Well, go back to Battlefront, because you better start building up credits, because we're getting the Clone Wars soon.
I mean, the good news is I've yet to spend any credits I've earned in the game.
How many credits do you have?
200 some odd thousand.
Bloody hell.
Okay, so yeah, the recent Battlefront is voiced by a guy named Matt Sloan, who also does a lot of Darth Vader, including like in the Lego Adventures and a bunch of other games.
Huh, interesting. Nice. So how do we, just going back to just the fact that there's actually a diverse cast and diverse group on screen, how do we feel about it? Because I sort of feel, I know I'm just asking, how do we feel about things today, guys? Like I'm your Star Wars therapist, but I like that we sort of got a start down this path in Star Wars Rebels. And it feels like this is sort of building upon that.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely another step up from where we were in Rebels, which was a step up from Clone Wars. The on-screen diversity is matched better by the behind the microphone diversity now. The one thing I'm waiting to see how it pans out is how the writer room is going to shake out.
Yeah. I think the head... Actually, no, I don't want to make any comments about that without actually double checking and knowing. But no, I agree with you about that.
Yeah, so that's the missing piece for me at the moment. And the one thing I'm withholding judgment on until we see more.
Though we do know that isn't Athena Portillo one of the executive producers or yes. writers or something like that?
Yes. I think she's executive producing. Yeah. I think this kind of may be her baby. In a way, just from how I've seen how she was talking on the Star Wars show. But I could be wrong there. But yeah, actually, let's just go ahead and jump down to Jay's art corner.
Sure.
I feel like this ties in.
Sure. So one of the so I had two comments on the art corner. One comment was on the style of the show. When we got the first announcement about the show, it was mentioned as being an anime-inspired cartoon. And that got a lot of controversy on the internet, especially given that Dave Filoni's name was associated with it. He's a white person, not an Asian person. And people had sort of misgivings about that. And we on KanjaCast had a long discussion about cultural appropriation and when it's okay to have inspiration and when it's not okay. I'm not the right person to discuss anime, particularly because I'm not an expert or a fan of anime and I'm not Japanese either, but it's certainly something worth thinking about. And I think as we got more of a look into the show, it became fairly clear, at least to my unexpert eyes, that it was still very much a Western cartoon, but that the color pattern that they used, you know, they used a cel shading, which is 3D models, but then the textures they use on it sort of look like they're made to look like a cartoon, so like flatter, made it clear that they weren't just imitating anime, but they were maybe taking some color pattern ideas and that sort of thing from it. But either of you have insights on that aspect of it?
I'm going to need to see more than just the trailers to comment on how quote unquote anime inspired this is. It does raise some red flags for me when Dave just casually throws that out there. Nothing wrong with taking inspiration from other works, but there are definitely certain animation tropes that go along with anime that if they're brought into this would be a little sketchy for me.
Yeah, I'm not really the person to talk about anime either, but I like the look of the show so far. I mean, I know a lot of people don't, but it looks, I like that it's so visually distinct from both Clone Wars and Rebels and kind of helps make me hope that this may actually finally be the show that starts fresh.
Yeah, I mean, it's what we've seen so far, it's got a much warmer and brighter color palette than Clone Wars and Resistance and Rebels had, which is a welcome change for me. And part of this is because I come from the video game realm where we went through about a 12-year stretch where everything just had this sepia brown filter on it. And then the last couple years, we start getting some games that, oh, there are other colors that we can use. And it was just really refreshing. I look at what at the trailers we've gotten for Resistance, and I'm getting that same feeling. Oh, We have colors. That's great. I can't wait to see it on my screen.
And that transitions nicely to my second Art Corner topic I wanted to discuss, which was Amy Beth Christensen as the art director. She originally started with Star Wars, as far as I can tell, with both the Clone Wars and The Force Unleashed, working through the art team. Then she continued working through the art team on Star Wars Rebels and is now the art director of Resistance. And I thought that was worth mentioning because even though she's not, you know, an Asian American like the sort of folks that we like to discuss on the show, I do think it's really cool and worth mentioning that certain people have sort of worked their way up through the Lucasfilm pipeline and have been able to take on leadership roles that were maybe occupied previously by white men, for example. And I've always liked Amy Beth Christensen's work, especially she does a really good job with like posters and flyers and just little things you see on the side that make the universe feel real and lived in. And I hope to see more of that under her direction in Resistance.
That's a really good point about her having come up through the company, because Athena Portillo did the same thing. They talked about how she started out as an intern and now she's an executive producer on the show, which I think is really cool.
It's definitely a case where we're seeing over at Lucasfilm, they are providing opportunities for people who typically don't get them in this industry. And that's a good thing. And yeah, like you said, Jay, Amy Beth Christensen isn't a person of color, but she is a woman in a role that is throughout the industry is traditionally held by white men. So it's going, just that alone is going to bring a different perspective to the art design on the show. And I'm all for that.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. And it'll be interesting to see what Jay comes up with for his art corner once we're a little bit further into the show and we actually get to talk about Cass.
Yes. I am looking forward to see what sort of concept art and things we get of him or what things influence his design and that sort of thing.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to jump down to our next section, which is Tell That to KanjiCast, in which we got questions. And these are going to be fun. So Diana asked us too. Her first one is, if Ming-Na Wen finally gets her due and guests on Resistance, what kind of character would you like her to voice?
A human.
Oh, okay. What else?
So I just wanted to get that out there. I was thinking I want her to play some sort of veteran experienced leader of some sort. Maybe the Jaeger analog, but on the Resistance. Give us another Resistance high officer type.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be really good. I will say I'm still holding out hope that Ming-Na Wen eventually gets a live action role. And
you stole my answer.
I know. And I've got the perfect thing. Cast her alongside Idris Elba, who's playing Talon Card, and she can be Shaded Dukal.
We're going to cling to that fan casting until we die, aren't we?
Oh, hell yeah, we are.
Yeah. I would say the one thing I would really love to see is for her to be in Jon Favreau's show, the live action one. Because S.H.I.E.L.D. has to end at some point, and I would just like her to continue to have consistent work and kick some ass. But yeah, live action. Actually, just let her do whatever she wants.
Yeah, blank check. What does she want to play? Give it to her.
Yeah. And the second question, which is related to this, is who would your dream guest star voice actors be? And I have one that I'm going to save for either one of you steal it, is Dan Donahue, because I would like Shriv to be in the show.
Oh my god, yes, I want Shriv. I want Shriv on this show. I'm gonna say Billy West, just because he's one of my favorite voice actors out there, and I'd love to see what he would come up with for just a random alien species.
Ooh.
Dennis Lawson.
Oh.
Don't you get my hopes up for that, Jay. Don't you dare.
Is that your George voice I hear sneaking through, Brian?
Oh no, that's just my angry voice.
It sounds like your George voice.
Oh no, my George voice is much more subdued. Well, you know, we're gonna release the films on Blu-ray.
Oh, I'm terrible. Yeah, voice actors. Oh, did you guys see, so apparently, speaking of guest stars, apparently Elijah Wood is going to be a guest star on the show.
So we're taking the hobbits to Colossus?
The hobbits. Yes.
Excellent.
Oh my god, and what's his face is in episode 9 to the same era.
Oh,
Dominic, I can't name.
Oh, I am not doing well with names today.
Monahan.
Monahan, something, Mona something.
Yes. I'm so sorry to everyone. This is why I should write better show notes, because maybe this will help. But that should be interesting to see. And then Nancy asked us multiple questions. First off, I think we kind of answered this one, but who is your favorite character so far?
Milk Drinker.
Yeah, if we're going favorite character, I'm going to say Niku.
I'm going to go with Tora. Which racer do you like best?
Kind of the same answer. The Milk Drinker's awesome Black Ace TIE Fighter. Modified TIE Fighter.
It looks more like a TIE Striker.
So it looks almost like an old Jedi starfighter from Revenge of the Sith 2, but I think they said in the Aces video that they just called it a TIE fighter, so they might have just been being generic, but they say it's a modified old TIE fighter.
So it's an ugly is what it is.
Oh no.
Yes, in the classic X-Wing series sense.
Take it back, you've ruined it for me.
I mean, that's what they said. I'm just pointing it out.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
At least it's not a TIE Defender.
You shut
or
your
Y-wing.
You do not. You shut your mouth. You don't ever put TIE Defender in the same sentence disparagingly with Y-wing.
But why not? They're both not great.
The TIE Defender is a beautiful craft of a more civilized era.
I mean, I agree.
The TIE Defender is
nice
ugly. The TIE Defender is so ugly.
It is not ugly. The missile boat.
Ugly.
The missile boat is ugly. The TIE Defender is beautiful.
Hey, whoa, 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 whoa! Now we've gone too far.
All right, who's gonna win in this fight between the three of us?
We're gonna have to poll the audience.
We should do a spinoff episode about starfighters.
I mean, I could probably wrangle 2.5 hours out of that.
I mean, Jay, I've already beaten your butt when it comes to starfighters once, so.
Veneer is better than Pash, dang it.
I think I have the Starfighter Draft Trophy that says otherwise, but keep telling yourself that.
It was badly judged. That trophy has an asterisk on it.
It was beautifully judged. You were just wrong. Your Imperials were no match to my Rogues.
I will never be over it. It's been like 13 years and I still will not get past that. It was wrong.
It was beautiful. Actually, so now that the boys have ruined Griff's ship for me by calling it an ugly, I think I have to go with Freya because I like the red color scheme.
That is a very pretty ship.
Right? Do you guys have one? Besides, or Brian, did you answer? I can't remember.
Freya is my favorite racer. I think Tora flies the one that looks a little like an R-41 Star Chaser. Was my favorite ship of the bunch.
That's pretty cool. Okay, question 3, which I already partially answered with my voice actor question. Who from elsewhere in the saga would you like to show up on the show?
Rae Sloane. Capitalized.
But she's dead.
We don't know that. She might have just been on vacation to the Colossus.
I'm telling you, I think she's dead. You know I think she's dead.
Listen, just because you were right once about Rae Sloane doesn't mean you're always right.
Does it? Oh. What if... Do we think there's a chance the Tico sisters might be in there?
Ooh. Mm. Ooh. I think there's a fair shot that could happen. That's the kind of film cameo that I think would work in this series.
Yeah, because we already know we're getting Poe and Phasma. And we're getting Leia. Which actually... Ooh.
Do we know when their home world was strip-mined?
Not off the top of my head, but if we get the Tico sisters, there's a solid chance we could also get Holdo, because I think they're assigned to her ship.
When did they enlist? Do we know that?
They were pretty vague about it, I think, okay. In both.
Because I'm wondering if maybe their world strip mined and they are hopping from outpost to outpost trying to stay under the radar. And that's where they get recruited by Poe.
Ooh, that's a thought. And speaking of Poe, I want to see the rest of Black Squadron. Whatever is left of it at that point.
Oh, God, we've got the last issue coming out tomorrow and I'm so nervous.
It's fine. Everything's fine.
We already saw a dead member of Black Squadron on the ground in the last issue.
I know. But I think, you know what? Even if we're not getting Jessica Henwick in episode 9, if she wanted and she was willing to come back and her schedule would allow, I feel like Jess Pava being in Resistance would be a much lower. It'd be a lot easier for her to do.
Oh, yeah.
Right, because they can do recording remotely.
Yeah, exactly. They just need a studio with an ISDN line and fire off the lines and they're good to go.
Yeah.
I also want Snap hauling around some B1 battle droid parts.
Yes. Oh, that'd be so good. All right, come on. We can get more creative than this. I believe in us. Who else would we want to see?
Retired General Antilles with retired Colonel Jansen.
All right, creative. Zara Leonis and Mary Spanjaff from Servants of the Empire. Ooh. Adult version.
That's a good one. All right, tell it to us a little bit more. What are they doing?
So we know that they're sort of on their own-ish. So maybe they are... Maybe they are themselves working for the Resistance as agents, and we know that Mary Spanjaff is a computer expert, so maybe she's involved helping in the spy operation to try to find out who the First Order agent is.
Ooh, that would be fun. Are there any characters from Rebels that we would want to see? Wait, Hondo. How did I not say Hondo before this?
How old would Hondo be by Resistance?
Pretty old, but we don't know how Weequay's age, number one.
True.
And number two, he's going to be at Black Spire, so he's alive.
I mean, on the other hand, the thought of retirement home Hondo fills me with so much glee.
He needs to have a cane and shake it at people.
And then he says to Kaz, let's be pirates. I've trained pirates before. It's great.
So, Bria, you mentioned this earlier, but mm-hmm. if Sabine is going to be an inspiration, then she should definitely show up and meet Tora Doza.
That would be pretty cool. Although I am somewhat hesitant about anyone besides Hondo. Mostly because of how Rebels ended.
When they're making ties to previous animated properties, I get a little worried that they're going to lean on it too much.
That's true.
Yeah. Even if like they just, you know, you see some piece of art or she gets met reference in passing, that would be really cool.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Iden wasn't exactly affiliated with the Resistance at that point, right? So she could have probably been hopping from outpost to outpost doing various odd jobs.
Actually, that would make sense because her and Stupid Face mentions how Del and her were using the Corvus and, you know, he had a crew and they were hauling things. So... it would actually make sense for them to be by the outpost at some point because they're not members of the Resistance. It's only Shriv who's in the Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh my God, I would die.
Hey, it makes sense. I mean, the work they're doing at that point in time, they could easily take him out to some remote outpost like the Colossus.
I'm trying not to get my hopes up, Brian.
I know.
I can be satisfied with Shriv. Who I just realized, I'm pretty sure at one point when you're in a galactic assault and you're fighting on the side of the resistance, not the galactic assault. When you're in starfighter assault, I could have sworn I heard Shriv say first order, more like worst order.
That's one of my lines. I like it.
Like, I could have sworn I heard Shriv say that when I was like over Dakar the other day.
Okay, I like Shriv now. He's finally won me over.
I'm sorry, did you not like Shriv before?
I mean, don't shoot me, but yeah.
You have no soul.
I know.
Why are you like this?
I drink a lot of milk. Like a good Imperial.
Jay. Why? That's another thing you need to do, Brian. Just do a supercut of every time we just say Jay.
Listeners, if you want a timestamp for me, every time we say that, I will totally supercut this.
Oh my god. Okay. On a not dang it, Jay note, is there anything else that we're just like generally hoping to see happen in the show, or anything else we just want to mention in terms of the representation and how cool it is that, you know, Kaz is the lead and he's, given that he's being voiced by a mixed race actor, he's, you know, there's not as much ambiguity as there was with Ezra. But any other just general, what do you want to see happen?
One art thing I forgot to mention since we discussed Kaz's design briefly. Folks talked about this on Twitter, but in case anyone doesn't know, one of Kaz's designs shows the New Republic symbol originally seen in Del Rey Books' Aftermath and later in the Force Awakens visual guide. So it's pretty cool to see the New Republic symbol actually being used in a TV show now.
Yeah, with the coloring and everything too, with the yellow and blue that we saw. I think Delroy put that out at some point.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, not quite from a representation standpoint, but the big thing I'm hoping for is that this is truly the clean break and fresh start that it's kind of looking like it may be. All the interconnectedness of the Clone Wars and Rebels was great, but the audience that started with the Clone Wars are adults now, so getting a new entry point for a younger audience that isn't bogged down by 10 years of animation history, I think is a really important thing that needs to happen.
Yeah, especially because they've made it a point of saying that they are purposely skewing this show younger. Mm-hmm. So because they're doing that, I think it's even more important that, like you said, Brian, that this show is a clean break and that these kids who are 5 years old can watch the show and not need, you know, hours upon hours of other timeline explained to them. Because let's be honest, there's probably a kid watching this show that has only ever seen The Force Awakens.
Yeah. I imagine for a pretty sizable chunk of the audience it's going for, this is going to be their first Star Wars.
That's just crazy. Oh, man. That makes me happy that there's probably going to be out there some young Asian kid who gets to see someone who looks like them the very first time they see the galaxy far, far away.
I would have lost my mind if I'd gotten to see something like this when I was 6.
Yeah. That's the other thing I'm looking forward to is I don't think they're going to have it happen this year, but can you imagine next year all the Halloween costumes we'll see?
Oh my God, my heart will grow three sizes.
I want to adopt all the tiny Kazes and all the tiny Toras already.
Oh no. The cosplay at Celebration.
So much. Oh man, they'll have had time too, especially because Tracy said she would look into getting the turnarounds for people.
Oh, my heart.
Aww.
I can't wait.
Now, if only they'll make Kaz's jacket for adults, too.
I got to admit, I've got some serious jacket envy there.
It's so good.
It's got, like, Wedge's helmet's color scheme on it.
How to get Brian to do anything. Mention.
I'm going to cosplay this, aren't I?
You're just now realizing this?
Oh, no.
Oh, honey, this is adorable.
Oh, no.
At least you don't have to color your hair this time.
I mean, I color my hair because I want to.
That's true. You could pull, I mean, you right now how your hair is, you could pull off a good Ezra.
No.
I'm saying, Brian. I'm just saying.
Nope. Nope. No, I'll give you Kaz. I'm not giving you Ezra.
Aw. I mean, okay. Well, now you know that everyone's heard you say this, so they're just going to, you know, hold you to it, right?
Damn it, listeners. Yeah, you're going to hold me to
this. When you get audio commitments on this show.
And what's going to happen, as soon as I hit stop and save the file, Bree is going to go out and tweet to everyone that I committed to this.
I'm sorry, you think I'm going to wait for you to hit stop?
I need to refresh Twitter right now, don't I?
Not quite yet.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's not your username. Hold on.
There's some other person that's just committed.
Listeners, you're getting a glimpse on how Bria and I enable each other to do bad things in real time. We've been doing this, what, now for 11, 12 years?
More specifically for about 6 or 7.
Okay.
But, do you want to tell them about the time I made you be Zuko?
Yeah, so one time, Bria was doing, beach holiday, Avatar Fire Nation, and, they needed a Zuko. So, I got nominated, and I dressed up as Zuko, and then I got some really awesome facial scarring makeup. I got some pictures somewhere. It was really cool.
Did you regain your honor?
Yes, I did indeed regain my honor.
Yeah, there's actually a picture somewhere of you holding up your arm going, honor! Okay, now the tweet's out there, Brian.
Okay, I look forward to all you listeners holding me to that.
Uh-huh. All right. Anything else you guys want to mention about Resistance before we wrap it up and go back to eagerly counting down until the episode airs, and I'll be on a stupid train when it does air?
No, because I'm afraid of what else you're going to make me commit to if we keep running this show.
Oh, fine. Jay, how about you, buddy?
Although, just FYI, I think they announced for some folks that it will be airing early on the app for those of you who can't stay up later or whatnot. So check it out in the morning if you can.
Great, because I'm an old and I don't want to stay up that late.
Oh, we should see if Tracy will tell us what time, because if I have to wake up at 6 at New York on a New York Comic Con day, I should probably plan that in advance. But I'll be rooming with other Star Wars people.
That could be fun.
There you go.
Interesting. Okay. Well, all right. So we're going to wrap up our discussion, our little preview episode of Resistance there. I'm really looking forward to when we get to talk about it more. We'll probably wait for at least a season about Kaz to be out. And I'm really, really hoping we'll actually get some more Asian characters in the show, whether it be via his, you know, his family, or we get more cameos, et cetera, et cetera. So for our next episode, we are once again going to do something a little bit different. For the most part, we've been talking about characters who are, one, human, and two, a little bit more, well, basically just human agents. When I was doing some research for the show, I discovered that Nalini Krishna, who played Bara Sophie in Attack of the Clones, she was born in the Fiji Islands and raised in Australia, but according to Wikipedia, her roots are Indian and Nepalese.
Which
means that we are going to count her for this, and it will be a slightly different discussion because we've never really tackled the whole, you know, ethnic actor playing an alien character before. So yeah, so we're going to talk about Barriss, and it's going to be interesting because I might have to actually make myself rewatch part of the Clone Wars. Get ready for that Twitter meltdown.
You might have to watch that one solo. I can't submit myself to that arc again.
It's okay. But also, just a heads up, people, we are also probably going to be talking a little bit about Barriss in Legends. So
MedStar.
So if you'd like to do your homework, go read the MedStar duology. The first one is called Battle Surgeons, and the second one is called Jedi Healer. And they're both really great. You should read them.
In case you need motivation to read it, it's basically Star Wars MASH. So go read it.
I mean, that is a great elevator pitch.
Yep. And all right, so we're going to wrap it up there. Like I said, we're talking about Bears of Fee on the next episode. And don't forget, if you have any questions for us to answer on a future episode or just want to chime in, you can tweet them to us via the Tashi Station account.
All right, this episode of the ConjuCast has been brought to you in part by you, our Patreon subscribers. It's patreon.com/Tashi Station. $1 gets you in on the level that gets you access to our Patreon-exclusive Slack team, where we source a whole bunch of the stuff we talk about on this show and the other ones on the network. And this show is a part of the Tashi Station Podcast Network. You can find it on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, and you can also find our mega feed containing all of our network shows on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. On Twitter, you can find us with the handles Tashi Station. You can find Bria with Chaos Bria. Jay is Admiral Jello. I'm Lane Winry, L-A-N-E-W-I-N-R-E-E. Again, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Find us there. Leave a review if you like the show. You can find our columns and news at TashiStation.net. Thanks for listening to another episode, and we will catch you all next time.